All right, welcome back. Hour number two, and it's a Monday, and middle hour of the program means that it's the Jeff and Erica COVID Chronicles edition for tonight. We'll do this twice more during the week. And what we're looking at here is something that is gathering momentum. Out of the headline news, such as it is or isn't, it's growing. And what's growing appears to be the number of people who have been vax-injured, and those injuries are continuing to become worse. And people are dying. And we're talking about the vaxxed here, but we don't want to forget for a moment that the unvaxxed are also becoming afflicted with vax-like injuries, and they're dying. Things are changing. There's a lot going on that is a groundswell, but it's not visible because the controlled media does not want you to know or to see what's going on. That's the game they play. Welcome back, young lady.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah, you sound happy. Had a nice dinner, and the maid did the dishes, and the house was clean today, and all is well. That's
right.
Good. Right. Yes. Here's a fun, let me do this real quick. This is a fun thing. There are cult movies out there, and one of them is certainly The Last Man on Earth, 1964, starring Vincent Price. It was filmed in Italy, around Rome, and it was about a virus that annihilated humankind. They were all gone. Everybody was dead, except one man was still alive, and that was Vincent Price. And people talk about predictive programming and things, and then we fast forward to the current pandemic. I have other words for it, but and that allegedly, remember how it allegedly came from a bat? Huh? It was a bat that wiped out, and the pandemic was talked about as potentially going to eradicate maybe everybody. We didn't know. There was all that panic in the beginning. Oh, my God, it's out of control. It's spreading. It's spreading. Well, here's a little 60-second clip from 1964's The Last Man on Earth. Now, this film was remade with Will Smith in the lead, I don't know how long ago, 15 years, 10 years ago. But this is the original, and here's Vincent Price. Is this predictive programming? I'll let you make your own decision.
But you lived through all this. Do you know why?
Perhaps I was chosen. That's a laugh. Or perhaps it's because a long time ago when I worked in Panama, I was bitten in my sleep by a bat. My theory is that the bat had previously acquired the vampire germ. By the time it entered my blood, it had been strained and weakened by the bat system. As a result, I have immunity. Well, it's only a guess, but it's all I have to go on.
Well, there, a little teaser back in 1964. Bats, immunity, a world global plandemic and genocide, all wrapped into one. Anyhow, there's a lot of material.
So the moral of the story is get bit by a bat?
That's it. Go to Panama and get bitten by a bat, and you'll be okay. Yeah, it's worth a look. It's a black and white movie, and it had a certain texture to it. It is quite a cult favorite now. It has been for years, I guess. The Last Man on Earth. So how successful will they be with their genocide, the eradication of excess humans? Where will this all end up? Where is it going? We know a little bit more than we used to. So as we kick off 2024, what's your general feeling about what we're going to see during the year? As I pretty much iterated a lot of that in my opening comment. I think things are growing like a tsunami in the background, which we're not allowed to see.
Well, I think so, too. I think we're seeing more consequences, more fallout from these injections, and, you know, the people that initially appeared to have done okay with these injections are now manifesting signs of immune deficiency. And if you're someone that can smell these people, then the smells seem to be getting quite a bit worse.
They do. Now, that's interesting. Let's not run past that. People who claim to be able to smell the vaxxed, or certainly something coming from the vaxxed, are now reporting that their reactions and responses to these odors, aromas, and stenches are becoming more violent. I mean, they really can't stand it. They want nothing to do with this smell.
Right.
It's interesting.
You know, it's hard to know if these people are, in fact, emitting more of these noxious odors, odors of death, odors of just bad physiology. You know, their livers are not working properly, so they're not detoxifying ammonia,
right,
among other things. And you know,
right,
you can smell,
right,
these compounds. And then they're emitting VOCs, volatile organic compounds. Their bacteria is probably genetically modified, as they are, and emitting their own classes of VOCs, some of which can be really noxious. And you can measure this, the gases coming off of these people with a VOC. People have done it. So that's, you know, not in somebody's imagination. That is happening. But by the same token, I think the people that have become so exceptionally sensitized to these smells and the reactions that they are having, it's probably indicative of what's being called chronic inflammatory response syndrome. And a while back, we had played a video of a girl, young girl, that had this syndrome, and we used to hear about it primarily with mold-related illness. You know, and it's when the immune system gets stuck in a hyperreactive state, and you need to detox whatever the toxin is, and it can be a variety of things. It isn't just mold. It can be any type of biotoxin that flips the switch and gets you stuck in this overreactive state. So there's probably some of that going on, and you know, if that pertains to you, you probably want to look into this syndrome known as chronic inflammatory response syndrome.
C-I-R-S.
Yeah, C-I-R-S. And there are clinicians and doctors, I mean, this is a bona fide field of medicine, who are skilled in dealing with this. You know, and there's many that are you know, in the U.S. and probably abroad at this point. I mean, this field of medicine has been around since the late 1990s, and it was started by a brilliant doctor, Richie Shoemaker, who noticed people in the Chesapeake Bay area getting sick from dinoflagellate poisoning. It was from a red tide, an algae mm-hmm. bloom, where these organisms would release aerosols into the Chesapeake Bay area. And, you know, many people were unbothered by it, but there were some people, and he's now honed in on a gene that predisposes people to being uniquely susceptible to biotoxins. About 24% of the population does carry a gene that makes it very difficult for them to deal with biotoxins. And, you know,
biotoxins,
it's manageable.
Meaning synthetic, organic,
it doesn't matter.
All kinds.
Well,
doesn't
generally
matter.
A biotoxin is defined as something less than 1,000 Daltons. Now, does the spike protein...
A Dalton being a size.
Molecular weight, yes, atomic mm-hmm. weight. And mm-hmm. I believe when I checked, the spike protein was about 70,000. Now, that's the full-length spike protein. Now, if you broke that down, I think, you know, when you break that spike into fragments, you could very well have, you know, what is defined as a legitimate biotoxin. But biotoxins are things like mold, mycotoxins, and there are many varieties of mold that produce very toxic mycotoxins, carcinogenic, genotoxic. You know, in some cases they can be deadly. You know. And then we have the dinoflagellates, which are the marine organisms that produce things like ciguatoxin, which can accumulate in certain fish and make you very sick, brevetoxin, mitotoxin, and they're nerve agents. You inhale them, and they're in your mm-hmm. system within seconds, and they produce mm-hmm. a long list of you know, inflammatory reactions, not the least of which can be these neurological symptoms, including paralysis.
Well, I don't.
So
I hope. Yeah.
I think sometimes it may help to view this spike protein as a biotoxin, and that may be the best way to provide remediation for it.
Right.
Which would include getting away from the exposure. It's never not going to be toxic. It's toxic for everybody, but it's just more difficult for people with this particular genetic gene. It's called HLA. DRDQ, and you can be tested for it, but it's just harder for those people to deal with these types of toxins because they don't eliminate them very efficiently, and they accumulate.
I hope I don't have that gene.
Well, probably, but at this point in life, you
doesn't
know
matter.
Because we live in such mm-hmm. a toxic world. You know,
that would not be a pleasant thing. Is the world toxic? Is grass green?
Right.
My God, it's awful. Now, you said something else that we've talked about before, and the idea of destroying the spike protein in your body that your body is actually producing, unless you take that one vaccine that is nothing but spike protein. So if we break this, let's say we have a spike protein, and we find a way to break it, fracture it, shatter it into 100 particles. We've defeated it, right? Wrong.
No,
we don't
not
know.
Necessarily.
Not
we
necessarily.
Don't know.
Okay, tell them the story.
Well, there are these prion domains, meaning segments of proteins in the spike protein, so that when you break it into these pieces, what you may inadvertently be doing is exposing these prion motifs that can, you know, roam around the body and cause protein misfolding wherever they land.
Creating spike-induced prion proteins all around your body, in your blood system, and that blood goes right into the brain carrying these newly created prion proteins into your brain, which is the last place you want them to go.
Yeah, you really don't want them there. And they're instantly inflammatory. So the brain gets inflamed, and headaches,
yep.
Blurred vision, tinnitus, dizziness.
Many of you people with headaches may have been spiked, and those spike in your body are creating prion proteins, which go to your brain and create inflammation, and you have a headache. That could be what's behind part of it, at least. There are other things we've pointed out, but that's a big. This whole thing about prion proteins is enormously important.
Yeah.
There are prion proteins in your body, but just remember, by definition, to keep it simple, if the spike comes along and meets a regular protein, which has been created to do something of use for the body, it can ruin this protein and cause it to misfold, and from then on, it is a potentially deadly pathogen. If it gets in the brain, especially,
this is the cascade.
Yes,
it begins forming these amyloid fibrils, thread-like, you know, structures that clog up tissues, clog up blood vessels, and
call them
just
clots.
Impair the function.
Early clot forms. Yeah,
it's not just blood. I have to emphasize that it's not just blood. It's whatever organ or tissue this winds up in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, the most recent paper with this out of Sweden, this Swedish team, Nystrom and Hammerstrom, they have found a segment in the spike protein that when it's cleaved, it is an exact match for the human prion protein in the scrapie form. So that means that when that bumps into one of your native prion proteins that's in a normal conformation,
configuration.
Nothing wrong
yep.
with it,
yep.
and it causes it to misfold, then the cascade of protein misfolding begins, and you have Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease.
In other words, you have mad cow, mad deer, CJD, VCJD, Envy, CJD, it doesn't matter what label. You basically have transmissible spongiform encephalopathy, TSE, and you're out. You're out. Your brain will end up looking like Swiss cheese, quite literally. I'm not trying to scare anybody, but just understand that the it's kind of like baseball. The fourth hitter is called the cleanup hitter. Let's say hitter number one causes blood clots. Hitter number two causes myocarditis. Hitter number three will cause turbo cancers. But the cleanup batter may be the prion protein. That may be the ultimate takeout mechanism.
And that's something that wouldn't necessarily show up right away. That tends to have a somewhat long, months to years, latency period.
Didn't we see a story recently about, it raised the question or the specter of a turbo prion protein, a very fast acting one. Am I remembering correctly? Wasn't there something about that?
I don't know. The one that afflicts the deer seems to manifest fairly quickly.
Well, deer, remember also the deer are much more motile than cows. I mean, deer get all over the place. They lick each other like there's no tomorrow. They just do that. Mm-hmm. And they are spreading these prion proteins through saliva. It's in all body fluids. And if they are in a meadow, so to speak, and they're urinating, et cetera, in the meadow, those prion proteins, if they have CWD or chronic wasting disease or mad deer disease, which is mad cow disease, if they're dumping that off into the ground, it goes into the ground and it's uptaken by the grasses and plants which the deer eat. And yes, prions can be spread that way.
Yeah.
Simply eat grass that has been anointed with prion proteins in the soil, and it comes right up in the grass and it gets eaten. That's another transmission vector. So you deer hunters out there, I know most of you will understand that there is an issue with deer that have CWD, and unfortunately the most poignant advice I've ever seen from a governmental agency warning deer hunters about this problem is, hey, it might not be a good idea to harvest deer that are staggering around and drooling or otherwise acting very friendly and not afraid of you. That's suggestive of severe brain damage in the deer. Mm. And it's not contained in the deer's brain. It's in the meat. It's everywhere the blood goes.
Yep.
And so you eat venison, and there I remember there were three deer hunters, and I'm going to say it was Alabama. I'm not sure. But I covered this 25 years ago in great detail on the program here when the mad cow thing broke out in England. The three deer hunters in Alabama had gone hunting, and they harvested a deer, and they came back, and they had a barbecue. And they were all dead within 1 to 2 years. It was very short. They didn't make it for long. And they died of CJD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. That's what the officials said, but they died of mad deer disease because they ate the infested venison. They ate the meat and the blood and the proteins from that deer who had CWD. So the government is not warning them. This is not a good idea to harvest deer like that. Okay. No offers of testing, no nothing. So it's in deer in 38 states now, I believe, in the U.S., formerly U.S., and are spreading mad deer disease. They're spreading it. It's there. So, you know, just be careful.
Yep.
All right, here is another aspect of this. And as we look back on the last 3 years, the biggest enemy that all of us have faced, and I think this argument could be made, the biggest enemy, pragmatically speaking, that we all face is the Zionist-controlled, owned and operated mainstream media. The mainstream media has done nothing but lie and is an absolute accessory to genocide and massive murder on a scale that we've not seen on this planet. The mainstream media. Now, here's a little clip from the Communist News Network, and they have on as a guest for, it's just a little short clip we're going to play, someone named Sarah Downes. Sarah Downes. And we're going to play this, and she is absolutely pro-vax. She's a disinformation mouthpiece if I've ever seen one. And I just want you to listen to how she talks about these deadly injections, which are not vaccinations. They are biological weapons. All right, anything you want to add to that? Because this is a kind of an informative little clip. It's a good example.
Oh, this is painful to listen to. But this is, you know, the typical mainstream media here in the U.S. right now.
The mainstream media was behind the fear-inducing paranoia that drove so many Americans, 275 million, to taking these deadly injections. All right, here's this lady from South Africa. Listen to the verbiage, and you'll understand.
All right, so there are many factors contributing to vaccine hesitancy. I mean, you've looked at one of them, this sort of odd confluence of right-wing and left-wing conspiracies. Take us through this.
So it's this phenomenon where previously there was a lot of polarization along political lines, whereas now you've got the New Age and wellness groups combining the conspiracies with very right-wing groups. And it's not who you would typically expect to see together. And the link is mistrust in government or mainstream or corporations. And a lot of it is being driven by profit. And so they're using paranoia and mistrust, these influencers, to basically peddle these conspiracy theories. And then they're also selling their own products or making money through streams, those kinds of things. So that's kind of what the problem seems to be.
Mm-hmm. Give us some examples. I mean, it's not just about COVID vaccines, for instance. It sort of spreads throughout other vaccines, even other, you know, health phenomenon.
Yes, definitely. So there's a wide range of examples globally, actually, not just in the U.S. So to talk about the U.S., we've got Joseph McCullough, who has been peddling misinformation about sunscreen, saying that it blocks vitamin D absorption, and he's also selling his own alternative sunscreen. And his alternative wellness brand, he has a net worth of $100 million. So that's just one example. And someone in Australia has been peddling the same misinformation and using it to sell his books and all sorts of things. And in South Africa, we've had wellness doctors who usually do weight loss and aesthetics, and have nothing to do with public health or vaccines or infectious diseases. And they've pivoted to influencing over vaccines and COVID to sell their own products, their own detox protocols, things like putting things onto microscope slides and spreading information about what they're seeing on those slides that is just not true.
Okay, well, I think you get the point. The irony of what this lady says is that she's describing people on the right side of the tracks as well. There is so much profiteering going on with this horror of bioweapon genocide. It's incalculable. She said Joseph Mercola is worth $100 million. Wow, that's a surprise to me, but whatever. Now, if you look at all the doctors who are supposedly in the alt news and they're on our side, look how many of them are selling product. Money is driving both sides of this nightmare. Both sides. And they have superstores. And if you look at their products, they're all selling the same basic things. There's nothing new out there. And we know that these supplements are not going to reverse the genetic catastrophic damage in the human body from these injections. It just won't. You may get some symptomological relief, which is fine. But believe me, these people are a lot of millionaires in the making now. Believe it.
Well, but, you know, the reason that is people are not getting competent or adequate care from the people that gave them the injections.
No, the accessories to mass murder, those people that gave them the injections. The doctors,
the
nurses, the clinics.
So they're being gaslit and ignored or made to feel like they're paranoid. And so what are they left to do?
Precisely. Yep. No, they're being stampeded. They're being panic-driven every step of the way. And it's without the mainstream media, this wouldn't have gotten out the door, but it has.
Right.
All right, here's a little clip from very short from Dr. Ryan Cole, who is he's really kind of just mulling the idea of death as it has invaded his life. Obviously a caring man, and these are very interesting. I hadn't heard him so pensive about this before, but he is. He's a good one.
So what's happened to the autopsy?
Well, Anthony Fauci told our government to tell people don't do autopsies on COVID patients. You cannot find that for which you do not look. I have a post-vaccine 9-year-old on my desk, dead. I don't want to see one more child post-vaccine ever on my desk. Are the autopsies starting to happen? You bet they are, finally, because people are saying, well, why wouldn't we do them? And in that same town from which this 9-year-old died, a healthy 22-year-old wrestler, after his third shot, is now also coming to be on my desk so I can determine the cause of death there. We're told don't do autopsies, don't look, and that's what your government is giving you for data. Don't ask, don't tell, don't look. These are not the droids you're looking for. Everything is safe and effective. Go jab up the children with a shot that doesn't work for a virus that isn't here anymore, for a virus that most of them are already recovered from. Safe and effective. Don't
believe it. All right. That's Ryan Cole having to deal with autopsies and death. That's what he does. And obviously not easy to do, especially when he sees young children who have been essentially murdered. That's I don't know how else to phrase it.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to go back to our human file and read some more here. We got just a few done last time, so we thought we'd spend a little bit more time sharing some of these stories that you will never hear on the media platform. You might hear it once in a while in the mainstream media, but they don't talk about these things. In the alt news media, you might have a better chance to hear some of it, but it's all been swept away. People are just not talking about it.
Not at all.
Okay. We read that one last time. January 5th, the second vax, so-called, deterioration article.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So emotional. This is my first post here. I firstly want to say that I feel for every one of you. I was torn between having the jab and not having it. I heard so many negative stories to which I was told it was all conspiracy theories. The pressure to have the vaccine convinced me to get it, to which I had only the first two. Since the first one, I was not great and felt abnormal. By the second one, within 2 weeks, we had ambulances to the house, various visits to A&E, which ended up in embarrassment, as I am not an emergency, according to the staff. The emergency to me was I thought I was dying and was going to die very soon. I don't want to go into the symptoms, but it is extensive, chest pains being the major factor. Ever since that poor decision of getting vaxxed, my life is ruined, and I have tried so hard to get it back. It seems impossible, and it's driving a negative mental state. I should have a car park space at my doctor's as I'm there so much. They keep telling me I'm stressed. Being dismissed by the people you should trust is a profoundly negative experience. I have been private, which has put myself in debt, and I am none the wiser. I would try every solution I could find, but I feel the con artists have jumped on this boat as well. Every day is a struggle, and there may be one day that is good, and you are elated to see an improvement. But as sure as blank, it's short-lived, and you're back to being a shadow. I am so tired of this, but if you're reading this, you're not alone.
Well, words to the wise, we hope, for sure.
Yeah. All right, there's a lot of regret out there now, a lot of regret.
Well, the next two, they're short. Why don't you go ahead and do the next two as well? Someone named Sean.
Sean Vidiella is infamous by now. She was one of the very first healthcare workers here in the U.S., a nurse's aide, that was made to take the vax to keep her job. And she did, and she made a video of herself trembling and shaking, having, you know, seizures shortly after the vax, and was canceled on Facebook for posting that type of content. But that has not deterred her from trying to warn people about the harms, and she's suffered greatly. And she continues to chronicle her saga. And a couple days ago, she shared this. I'm so disgusted with myself. It was a memory that came up in Facebook 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My lack of knowledge, listening, and trusting the most untrustworthy people. Today marks 3 years of living hell. 6 months ago, I could say I have more good days than bad. The past 3 months have been a struggle to have a good day. Here, see Sean at her dumbest moment, and it's a photograph of her proudly displaying that she'd just gotten the vax, saying, I did my part, January 4, 2021.
Really sad. And really sad to look at this. Awful.
Somebody asked her, how long after getting the poke did you have a reaction? And she answers, within 24 hours, I had a headache that was unlike any I had ever experienced, and mild flu-like symptoms. Within 48 hours, I began to have spasms in my tongue, and within 72 hours, I was in full-body convulsions.
The neurological damage done almost immediately, the impact of these injections on the spike, and so forth. LNPs, we've got all the DNA particles now up to 400 billion per shot. It's just a terrible, horrible biological weapon of death, which has so many different ways of taking life out of the game. It'll kill you. I'm not saying every single person who's gotten shots is going to die. I hope not. There are some out there who feel that way. We always hold out hope here that there'll be something, some kind of a breakthrough, something to stabilize or at least keep the damage at bay. And we're not just talking about symptoms here and symptom relief. What's going on here is largely unobservable, even by many normal medical tests. It's just the way these shots were designed.
It's a situation now where, you know, damage has occurred and you just have to deal with the symptoms as they arise.
All right, here's unvaxxed and pregnant. It's a woman who's not vaxxed and pregnant. And she writes, hey, all, any advice for someone who is 14 weeks pregnant, unvaxxed, and is around a lot of vaxxed people? And someone responds to that, stay the F away from them unless you want a miscarriage. And the original poster says, it's kind of hard to do that when they're my partner's family and just have come to visit. I'm terrified now. I've been trying to stay in my room away from them, and I feel rude for doing that. They're here for another day. I have noticed, though, that the increased headaches have come on since they have been here visiting. And someone responds to that, to, I'm terrified now. Don't stress. Keep your immune high with natural organic foods. Air the house 30 minutes a day. Air out the house. Keep the humidity up in the bedroom above 60%, Drink herbal tea from pine needles and sage. Use a good water filter, no tap water. Bless you and the child. And the original poster says, I'm trying to. I always have all the windows open, too. Currently, there are 10 of us in this little crammed house. Me and my partner and mother are not vaxxed, but his side is. I'm quite upset he didn't use his brain, at least a little bit, considering I'm still early in the pregnancy and it hasn't left my head. And I'm terrified because I know many women who have had miscarriages due to spike proteins. Unfortunately, my pine needle is at the other house, my other house. We are at our farm for a few weeks, fixing this place up. And someone adds to that, thank you, praying it stays in there, the baby.
Let's hope. It made me think of that nurse, Nikki. Remember Nikki early on?
I do.
And she described a situation where there was a couple unvaxxed, and somebody vaxxed came to visit a day or two after they'd received the vax, and she stayed away. She was not in the same room as her husband and this friend, and yet she woke up the next day and was covered in bruises.
Yeah.
So just being under the same roof, it doesn't matter if you're in the same room.
No.
But obviously the airspace, you know, being in a confined, you know, it's not enough.
No. Someone, I
would at the very least have, you know, several air purifiers, ozonators going in that situation.
Absolutely.
And you can maybe it would cut it down.
If you have an HVAC system with ducting in your house where the air is circulated through a heater or a cooler, you can get ozone units to fit in that ducting, which will clean the air as it passes through on its way back to the furnace to be recycled and heated back up again. They have those. Or you just get a standalone unit, put it on your dresser or wherever, and keep the air as clean as you can. Someone wrote back to the pregnant woman, stay away. We lost a grandchild in 2022 when my daughter was pregnant. She was around vaxxed people from her church. No proof the vax caused it, but 5 days from her due date, she delivered a perfectly formed child. Looking back, several other moms I know lost their babies that year too. I will always wonder. Another note, I also know a pregnant lady who lost a perfectly healthy fetus at 9 months right after her dad was vaccinated. And the last person offers up, that's exactly what happens to me every time the vax family stays here. After a headache comes extreme fatigue. I'm so over it. So I just don't know how many times we can urge you. You, unfortunately, because of what has been done to all of us as a species, we have to make choices here. My goodness, if you're pregnant, you cannot be around vaxxed people.
No.
You can't.
No.
It's over. No. It's done. Done. It's not even a decision. It's done. You can't do it. But do you think a doctor is going to tell an OBGYN or anybody else, obstetrician? They're not going to say anything. They're afraid.
No, take a lesson from the women who have lost, you know, pregnancies over this. It's real.
Exactly. All right. Next group.
Are we back to January 3rd?
Yeah.
Okay.
Empathy for the vax injured. Let's try that. Empathy for the vax injured. See that? Halfway down.
Yeah, okay. My girlfriend of 4 years is lacking empathy and understanding because I don't feel like looking at my career or job currently, feeling the way I feel, and my family being torn to pieces. She's saying, it's been like a year and a half now, and apparently it concerns her. She's younger than me and has plenty more time, and she's perfectly healthy. I can't help but feel like I'm the burden. I'm slowly distancing myself away, and I don't like it. I told her yesterday I'm looking for an invisible friend that doesn't exist to talk to because I feel like I can't talk to her. I think I'm looking for a substitute person now. Has anyone else gone through something like this due to illness? I planned on building a life with this girl. I can't sit comfortable with the fact that she may just leave in XYZ years because I'm not better yet and because I have no direct path or plan of improving, as she was saying. She's been my lifeline even without helping me directly, and if I lose her, I feel like there's no point in life anymore. But I also don't see why I should be afraid of losing her if she can't be depended upon anyway. Thanks.
All right, here's another one in that same group. My husband helped out for 5 months and then told me I've been sick long enough and I need to just go back to what I was doing before. I was shocked and angry, but I didn't dwell on it. I can't imagine this. My husband helped me out for 5 months and then told me I've been sick long enough. My dad started helping me, going to doctor's appointments, brainstorming about what to do next. My husband has never been to an appointment with me. Something happened after that 5 months, and I couldn't understand it. He has no empathy. I didn't know this. We've been married for 5 years because I never needed empathy before. Soon after, he started telling me that I talk about being sick too much. Also shocking to me, he started messing with my head, which I now know he was punishing me for not being the wife that he knew. I thought I was crazy. I became suicidal, and I was also confused. He moved out 1 year and 8 months after I became ill and would not come back until I got a job. Meditated for an hour a day, worked out. Anyone with a normal brain can see I'm not capable of any of those things right now, so it became a standoff. He eventually told me he wants a divorce, so I'm in the middle of it now. One word sums it up: narcissist. I'm not saying she is or he is, but the empathy thing should cause concern. What if you have a relapse at some point or later on in life, something bad happens? You only know someone when something stressful or bad happens, and that's when you see who they really are. She either doesn't believe you fully, or no empathy is stopping her from understanding at all. People apparently are just losing their empathy, or they're getting overdosed being around someone who's tragically sick, and they just can't deal with it. I don't want to point fingers here. Again, I'm not saying she's a narcissist at all, but just going off the information in your post seems to fit. For me, I feel better because the source of my stress and anxiety, my emotionally abusive husband, is gone. Mentally, it's the best thing that happened, and it makes me feel better about being sick because I never would have known what he was going to do to me if I got sick until I did. So what's that old joke? You never know someone really until you divorce them?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Not much of a joke, but anyhow, go ahead.
All right, another
empathy
response.
Empathy for the vaxxed injured.
Yeah, waning.
Waning.
Another person says, my ex-fiancé walked out when I became ill at 3 a.m. and while I was waiting for an ambulance. I never saw him again. Honestly, it just made everything so much harder. And has only added to my health issues and nervous system chaos. Mm-hmm. Illness shows you people's true colors, sadly. If she is not supportive of you now, she won't be in the future either. Maybe better to know sooner than later. Now is the time to focus on yourself and your health.
Yeah.
And a last one, mine left me within the first 4 weeks. It's not easy being so sick.
Wow, I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh. These losses are just bailing out.
Yeah.
You're sick. I'm gone. I'm going to get somebody who's not sick. Goodbye.
Yeah. It's not easy being so sick and trying to mend a broken heart, but I am getting through it. This is brutal, and every day is a challenge for us all. Take care.
All right. I don't know if if we read this first one or not in this category, but it's worth reading again. Out of Hope. I just opened that up.
Oh, yeah, we did read that. Yeah.
We did? Should we do it
yep.
again? I
yeah,
am
I guess.
Just... Sure. Just about out of hope, people don't come back from this, do they? That's the title at the top. I'm just so worn down, so out of hope, that I will ever be able to live again in any meaningful way. Every sign and symptom seems to be pointing straight toward a painful early grave. If there is any reason or evidence for any hope out there, I sure would like to hear it. It's been 7 months now. For 7 months, my body has been killing itself. I went from completely normal, completely healthy, my whole life, to being ruined practically overnight. I never smoke, never drank, never did drugs. I have no prior health history at all. I didn't even take Advil. And then something in my brain and body broke, and my muscle is starting to waste away, more on my left side than my right. I was crippled with body pain and weakness. I couldn't sleep any longer. I developed terrible GI issues, and it's been a long, slow, continual decline ever since. Doctors spent the first few months completely writing me off and calling it anxiety. Go home, anxiety, nothing to worry about here. And since then, they've been just throwing their hands up and passing me off from specialist to specialist because they don't want to deal with a difficult case. They don't know what I have. Multiple x-rays, blood draws, CAT scans, MRIs, EMGs, and I'm still wasting, still fading, still writhing in pain day and night, and no one seems to care. Go ahead.
They found Lyme in my spinal fluid, but Lyme antibiotics for 2 months now and counting hasn't helped anything. They found Epstein-Barr, but they tell me there's nothing really to be done with that. This all started after getting the COVID vaccine, but they won't even touch that possibility. I have the muscle wasting of ALS, the stiffness of Parkinson's, and the pain of cancer. Portions of my body just won't work anymore. The muscle is dead and just hangs loose, while in some parts of my back, it's as tight as can be and will not release for anything. Just holding up my phone while typing in bed is tiring. I can't do anything, and no one can tell me what this is or what to do about it, if there is anything to be done. I don't know where to turn, where to go, where they might listen and dig deeper to try to figure this out. And I don't feel like there's enough time left anyway, as so much damage has already been done while doctors have wasted time acting like this isn't a big deal. What can I do? Where do I turn? Can I just die now? I keep hoping to just go in my sleep. People don't come back from this kind of damage, right?
Well, she's right. Unfortunately, we're not getting any accounts of people miraculously reversing and returning to normal health. This is a real tragedy, this one, and it's not the only one out there. There are millions and millions just like it, tens, twenties of millions. We don't even know.
No, this poor person.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people that did develop this type of muscle wasting, and you know what it is. It does sort of kind of look like ALS, you know, Lou Gehrig's disease, but it doesn't fit the classical criteria for it. So that they fumble along through the medical system, you know, without a formal diagnosis, and without a formal diagnosis, they don't really treat it. So they continue to decline. But it's probably, you know, some sort of neurological wasting disease. Because, you know, when the muscles are not innervated, you know, the nerves that are feeding those muscles are not working, not transmitting impulses, the muscles just atrophy.
Right.
And then, it, you know, it becomes a system-wide deterioration.
Okay, let's, I'm just about out of time. Let's do this bottom two there, young man and heart disease.
Okay.
My son, who was in the Army, had a two-hour cardiac workup before Christmas. After 2.5 years of back and forth between neurology and cardiology, he was finally diagnosed with POTS. He is 22 and was told he will need a pacemaker before he is 40. The cardiologist said it's 100% caused by the vax. This disease used to be only found in adolescent females, and now he is seeing it all the time. He has a stress test in a week. I'm so mad. I wish I could take his place. My kid had a whole life ahead of him. It's all so unfair. And someone adds to that, my son had a heart attack a year ago at age 20. Now he's 21 and has to be on meds his whole life. The cardiologist told him to change jobs. He has had so many tests, scans, including bone marrow. He still has a blood clot in his heart. Happy to chat if you want me to. So go ahead, finish the last part.
Myocarditis has impacted my life recently. Late September, my partner was experiencing severe chest pain for a couple of days one night, and it was so bad we went to our local ER. They said he was having a heart attack. We were all in shock, as he's 26, he works out, eats healthy, and lives a healthy lifestyle, but having a heart attack? They rushed him to another larger hospital, and they did an immediate cardiac catheterization, to see if there was a blockage. The cardiologist believed he could be experiencing broken heart syndrome. This also didn't make sense. We could not think of anything that would have caused it. His ejection fraction was 30%, and troponin levels were extremely high, and was told he has heart failure. Their next possible diagnosis was SCAD. A month later, he had an MRI, and they stated a small portion of his heart appeared inflamed, so they officially diagnosed him with myocarditis. Our cardiologist makes it seem like it's not that big of an issue, but I am scared to death. He still experiences slight chest pain every once in a while, but is always fatigued and has congestion, which I just read is a sign of heart failure. Does heart failure and myocarditis go hand in hand? We are just lost and new to all of this, and I thought joining this group could help ease our minds, since doctors are not. Thank you for your time in reading and or responding.
Just another example of people being butchered, cut down, at the very doorstep of the peak of life. This is happening all over the place. You will never hear it. The bastards that run the mainstream media business will never tell you about this. And many in the alt-news world aren't focusing on these human aspects either. This is a real catastrophe beyond measure.
Yeah.
And people will not talk about it for the most part. And you'll see these people out walking around and seemingly normal every day when you go out. They're out, but they're suffering. 275 million Americans have taken these shots, at least.
Yeah.
All right. Good job. Thank you.
They're telling them that it's safe and effective.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sickening. All right. Good night. Thank you. Take care. Talk soon. And we'll be right back with another hour. Hold on.